Good morning, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. We are reading from the Friday, November 27th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. This is Ken in my regular Friday slot, bringing you the first piece from the top of the fold. Dubuque lags in high-level classes. Dubuque Community Schools Class of 2020 graduates took courses such as Algebra 2, Chemistry, and higher-level mathematics at a lower rate than their peers in other large Iowa districts, according to newly released data. The Iowa Department of Education recently released its 2020 Condition of Education Report, which examines educational trends across the state. The report includes information on the percentage of students in the high school class of 2020 who took Algebra 2, Chemistry, high-quality computer science, higher-level mathematics, physics, and world language classes. Dubuque Community Schools leaders say efforts underway should increase the number of students taking those courses. Students have to feel comfortable and confident that they can be successful in these courses, and by having a program set up to support and prepare students to take these classes, those are the things that we need to have in place, said Mark Burns, the district's executive director of secondary education. In the Dubuque district, 76.3% of 2020 graduates took Algebra 2, 66.3% took Chemistry, 11.2% took a high-quality computer science class, 48.4% took higher-level math, 23% took physics, and 86.6% took world language. The rate at which Dubuque students took each course was lower than the total percentage of students taking them in the state's 12 largest districts. Within the district, students from low socioeconomic statuses took the courses at lower rates than their peers overall. Burns said the district is working to improve its support for students at all levels so that when the time comes to take higher level courses, they feel ready to do so. It's about building that culture, he said. District leaders also have expanded the high school computer science offerings and added opportunities to expose middle school students to the discipline, which Burns said he hopes leads to more students taking these classes. A new alignment of science classes for students in the class of 2022 and beyond could add students to taking chemistry and physics, Burns said. Both subjects are components of the ninth grade science class, which could help students feel comfortable taking more coursework in both subjects. Burns said cases in which Dubuque students take classes at a lower rate than other districts could tie back to differing graduation requirements among schools. He said that while he would like to see the district's numbers improve in those six areas, particularly among some student subgroups, there are plenty of classes that students can take in other areas that also lead to gainful employment. Students are encouraged to take classes in areas in which they are interested. This is good information for us, but I think we have to balance it in the bigger picture, Burns said. Dan Johnson, principal at Dubuque Senior High School, said the school's Academic Access Task Force has looked at ways to improve access to both upper-level academic courses and courses that lead to gainful employment. One step that officials took was revamping the course registration last January, so students got to visit different departments and hear from teachers about all the different courses available to them and the careers to which those courses lead. That effort seems to have had success increasing the number and diversity of students taking some courses, Johnson said. He also noted that the state's data show an increase in course taking from 2019 to 2020 for graduates in most of the six courses highlighted in the report. Staff work with students to help them sign up for classes most appropriate for them based on their post-high school plans. Our goal is to make sure that we make students aware of the many opportunities that they have for courses to take here that would lead to them being successful at the next level when they graduate from high school, Johnson said. In the Western Dubuque Community School District, 85.1% of 2020 graduates took Algebra 2, 77.5% took Chemistry, 26.2% took High Quality Computer Science, 42.2% took Higher Level Math, 27.3% took Physics, and 86.2% took World Language courses. Kelly Simon, WD's Director of Curriculum, Instruction, and Assessment, said she expects the number of students taking math and science courses to continue growing as a result of district and state level shifts. Changes to state requirements for the district's science offerings should introduce more students to physics and chemistry, she said. A few years ago, WD officials revamped their algebra course for students struggling with math so they could finish the class more quickly and have time to take Algebra 2. Simon also noted that the percentage of district graduates who took high-quality computer science courses was significantly higher than the state rate. Those are some pretty specific classes, she said. You really have to be into computer sciences, so I understand why it's lower overall. But it's higher in our district, I think, because we do offer 3 or 4 different class opportunities for that, and that's a lot of offerings. Our next front page piece, Planted, honors deep local roots. With the opening of her new business in downtown Dubuque, Laura Claviter aims to do more than just provide a new product. She also wants to create a new experience. My vision is to create a space where people can not only come and get a plant, but also get real advice and the right information about taking care of it and keeping it healthy, she said. Planted, the name does include a period, will open its doors at 245 West 1st Street on Saturday, November 28th. The business will specialize in offering tropical plants hailing from warm weather areas like Florida and California, Claviter said. Such a selection will bring something new to the tri-states. These plants are more unusual and exotic, she said. They come in shapes and sizes and colors you cannot have year-round here, and I think people will enjoy that. It allows you to have something green even when everything else outside is gray. Claviter earned a horticultural degree from Iowa State University in 2011. In the years since, she has traveled abroad to enhance her knowledge and also made an impact locally. Claviter launched MicroGirl about 5 years ago. The business creates microgreens, small vegetable greens harvested in early development stages, and sells them to local customers. Much like that business, Planted will aim to provide something that doesn't already exist in the area. With each business, I've tried to find a gap in the market and fill that void, Claviter said. Claviter will occupy a pair of adjoining retail spaces at 245 West 1st. One will include retail space and a potting bar where people can create their own custom soil. The other will have a space for MicroGirl, as well as event and workshop space. Some space in the business also will be set aside for artists who can display their pots, greeting cards, fine art, jewelry, macrame, and other ceramics. Claviter said she's excited to become part of a vibrant downtown area, which features a brewery and a diverse selection of bars and restaurants. Her neighbors share their sense of excitement. Kim Hackett is co-owner of Wicked Dame, a wine bar located across the street from Planted. I think that having a retail space down here will really tie Main Street and Bluff Street together, said Hackett. The people who are shopping in the Bluff Street area will have another reason to come to this part of the downtown. While the name of Claviter's business is an obvious nod to the plants themselves, she emphasized that the moniker also represents something else. Claviter noted that many people refer to themselves as Dubuque transplants or replants, referencing the fact that they came to Dubuque from another city or recently returned here after living elsewhere. Claviter moved to Dubuque in 2015, as the city has evolved into feeling more like home. The name Planted conveyed the sense of belonging she feels. It speaks to the concept of being planted in Dubuque, she said. I really do feel planted here, and I feel like it is a special place. I wanted my name to be representative of that, too. Our final front page piece has with it a couple of pictures. A large one in the center of the page has a number of young people packaging things in boxes, and in the distance behind them, it appears other people are doing the same. And the caption reads, Katrina Mobley, Jamie Sheridan, Matt Spicer, and Adriana Mobley package Thanksgiving to-go meals at the Knights of Columbus Hall in the Joliet Event Center in Dubuque on Thursday. And we have another smaller picture beneath that, a young man handing what appears to be the packaged food into a car. Andrew Johnson delivers a Thanksgiving to-go meal to a drive-by customer. And our article is Community Serving Community. Amy Ball pulled her sport utility vehicle through the parking lot outside of Joliet Event Center in downtown Dubuque on Thursday and waited as volunteers ran inside to grab a few containers for her and her 8-year-old daughter, Braxton Griffin Ball. Most years, she and Braxton would be with family in East Dubuque for Thanksgiving, but due to the swelling number of COVID-19 cases in the area, the two would be spending the holiday alone. As a volunteer handed the meals through the window to them, Ball's eyes brimmed with tears. It's hard, she said. We usually go over to my aunt and uncle's, but with COVID, we couldn't have it. She and Braxton were one of the hundreds of families who stopped by the center to receive free Thanksgiving meals that local organizations worked together to provide for area families. About 400 meals were given out to those who drove to the center, while volunteers delivered another 600 meals to assisted living facilities and other people isolating due to COVID-19 concerns. It's the community serving the community, said Michaela Mobley, 15, who waited outside Thursday to bring meals to people's vehicles. It's a really good thing. It makes your heart feel a little better. Mobley's grandfather, the Reverend Lynn Spicer, is the senior pastor at Faith Temple United Pentecostal Church. I believe we sometimes forget how fortunate we are, Mobley said. Just to see other people happy and feel blessed, it is really a blessing to myself just to know that I am helping other people. Spicer said after he learned the annual Ginter Thanksgiving event, which feeds thousands every year, would not be possible in light of the pandemic, he started meeting with other church members and spoke with local organizations that helped work with him to make the meals possible. The day was combined an effort with Q Casino and Hotel, Dubuque Racing Association, Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, Salvation Army of Dubuque, Faith Temple United Pentecostal Church, and United Way of Dubuque Area Tri-States. The Knights of Columbus Hall was filled with people in blue t-shirts representing the church. Together, they worked to package meals and carry them outside. For Spicer to see so many from his congregation pulled together meant everything, he said. To be able to do this and see all of the people here from our church, we are blessed, he said. It means a lot to me to not just be a church that meets in a building. Rihanna Kennedy, who works at Dupaco Community Credit Union, said fellow employees told her about the event on Wednesday, so she decided to sign up. It means the world to me, she said. It makes me so happy, and my heart just explodes being able to help people who have lost jobs due to COVID. Dave Masterson, The executive chef at Q Casino and Hotel said he and a handful of other employees spent 3 days leading up to the holiday cooking all the meals. They made 2,500 pounds of turkey, 300 pounds of green beans, 7 cases of stuffing, and 125 pumpkin pies. "It's nice to do something for the community and help people out," he said. "I know they are in need." Jason Nieces, the Community Foundation's Community Development Coordinator, said volunteers would continue dropping off and handing out meals until they ran out. Not only was the day important for those who would not otherwise have a Thanksgiving meal, but for volunteers who dedicated their day every year to giving back and being with others, Nieces said. "People want to, especially now, if they do not have friends and family, they want to see people," he said. "I personally, before this, never delivered or helped with the production, but what would happen if is people would go out and do their deliveries and come back here and sit down and have a meal, or when people would go out and make their deliveries, they would visit with the folks who are shut-ins. We've got huge support, and we've got dozens and dozens of volunteers and people who stepped up." Now we turn to news from Dubuque and the tri-states. At the top of the fold is our daily briefing on the COVID situation. And the headline to that reads, 92 new Dubuque County virus cases, 3 area deaths. 3 additional COVID-19-related deaths were reported locally from 5 p.m. Wednesday to 5 p.m. Thursday, 1 each in Dubuque and Jackson counties in Iowa and in Grant County, Wisconsin. Dubuque County had 92 additional cases of COVID, 19 confirmed in that 24-hour span. The county's 14-day positivity rate had dropped to 18.3% as of 5 p.m. Thursday. Its to-date positivity rate inched up to 20.8%. By subtracting the number of related deaths and recovered from the number of confirmed cases, there were 3,405 active cases in the county as of 5 p.m. Thursday, a decrease of 31 cases from 24 hours earlier. Jackson County had 23 new cases in the 24-hour period, and its 14-day positivity rate stood at 21.9%. Jones County had another 14 cases in the 24-hour period. Its 14-day positivity rate fell to 28.2%, still the third highest in the state. Clayton County had 12 more cases, and its 14-day positivity rate stood at 25%. That's right. Delaware County had 11 new cases and a rate of 20.2%. The State Health Department did not release updated county-level hospitalization data again on Thursday. As of Monday, 59 Dubuque County residents with COVID-19 were hospitalized, the fifth highest total among Iowa counties. Also hospitalized were 16 infected Jones County residents, 13 from Clayton, 12 from Jackson, and 6 from Delaware County. 13 local long-term care facilities continue to be on the state's outbreak lists. The case counts were Luther Manor Communities, Dubuque, 82 cases, Shady Rest Care Center, Cascade, 18 cases, Manor Care Health Services of Dubuque, 15, Dubuque Specialty Care, 7, Hawkeye Care Center, Dubuque, 5 cases, Bethany Home, Dubuque, 4. Good Neighbor Home, Manchester, 82. Edgewood Convalescent Home, 9. Anamosa Care Center, 63 cases. Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center, 52. Great River Care Center in McGregor, 36. An increase of 1 case. Guttenberg Care Center, 17. An increase of 12. And Alcater Care Center, 9 cases. Iowa's statewide confirmed case count stood at 222,798, an increase of 3,189 over the 24 hours earlier. The state's related death toll rose by 41 to 2,312. In Wisconsin, Iowa County did not provide a daily update as of Thursday night, but the state's website showed an increase of 32 cases. Grant County reported 26 new cases, Lafayette County 10, and Crawford County 9. Statewide, there were 5,095 new cases, pushing the total to 374,537. There were 82 new related deaths recorded, so that toll moved to 3,240. In Illinois, Joe Davies County had not provided updated figures as of Thursday, but the state website showed 6 more confirmed cases for the county. Statewide, there were 12,022 new confirmed and probable cases, along with 131 additional related deaths. The state's totals moved to 697,489 cases and 11,963 deaths. We continue with we have a picture of a smiling couple holding two tiny little babies in what appears to be a neonatal ICU unit, and the caption reads, "Adam and Katie Rausch hold their twins, Nora and Lily, in the neonatal intensive care unit at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City." And the article reads, "Tears and smiles, Dyersville family home after twins' high-risk births." After spending nearly 4 months at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City, a Dyersville couple has returned home with two new additions. Adam and Katie Rausch found out in April that they were expecting twins. Following their 12-week checkup, the couple was advised to follow up at a high-risk clinic. They later found out that their babies were mono-mono twins, meaning the babies shared the same sac and placenta, an occurrence in only 1 out of 10,000 pregnancies. They were told not too many twins with this condition make it to the full term of the pregnancy. "It was an anxiety-filled pregnancy, but we tried to find joy and hope where we could," Adam said. Katie was admitted July 24th at 24 weeks to be closely monitored due to the high risk of the pregnancy. At 28 weeks, on August 21st, Nora Jean and Lily Marie were born, weighing 2 pounds 4 ounces and 1 pound 14 ounces. "This high-risk pregnancy was so hard to celebrate as it was, and then to throw a pandemic on top of it was heartbreaking most days," Adam said. The parents FaceTimed and Zoomed with family, but hospital visiting policies were strict. The parents were the only two allowed into their baby's bubble. As time progressed, the little family had the opportunity to be part of one of college football's newest traditions, the Iowa Wave. Regardless of the limited crowds, Katie and I were both completely blown away in what it felt like to have the players, coaches, fans, and people watching on television waving back and thinking about us during the wave, he said. "It felt like we had the entire state of Iowa backing us." Katie added, "When we got moved to our room overlooking Kinnick Stadium, it was like a breath of fresh air. It was a chance for us to have a slice of normalcy on a football Saturday. A few hours we could remove ourselves from the beeping monitors, numerous exams and tests." They tried to make it feel homey during the games. They ordered pizza, held their girls, reclined back in their chairs, and watched some football. "The gesture of the wave itself filled us with a little more positivity and made us feel like, okay, we've got this. Our girls are strong fighters, and we can do this," Adam said. "It was a little power up that we needed during that time." On November 16th, 87 days following the births, they arrived at their home in Dyersville. "Lots of tears and smiles," Adam said. "We arrived home to our families waiting in our driveway. It was the best feeling ever to have our girls home and together with our immediate families. Grandmas, grandpas, aunts, uncles, cousins got to see the new additions in person and not just on a phone screen. Proper precautions were taken to not risk anything with the current pandemic, but normalcy was back in their lives. When we walked through our front door," Katie said, "Adam and I both finally felt like a mom and dad, and we finally felt like a family since we were home. The Rausches are now a complete healthy family. Nora weighs 8 pounds, 1 ounce, and Lily is 6 pounds, 14 ounces. Now we turn to our opinion page and today's Our View Quick Takes, the editorials that reflect the consensus of the Telegraph Herald editorial board. We have kind of a smirky, not smirky, but not a happy face and two smileys for today. And our first one is not the smiley. "Amid an increase in food insecurity, tri-state residents help those in need." National reports this week on widespread food insecurity were troubling. While much of the country prepared for a holiday hallmarked by a bountiful table, many others were struggling to keep their families fed. People lined up in historic numbers at food banks across the country this week, as more Americans face food insecurity issues in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic and its exacerbating effects. National news programs showed long lines of cars in several states waiting to pick up prepackaged boxes of meals for the Thanksgiving holiday. While the needs have increased locally, many area nonprofits, churches, clubs, and individuals have stepped up to fill the void. Like the East Dubuque Lions Club, which partnered with the East Dubuque Food Pantry to raise money, plan, and prepare Thanksgiving meals for 500 city residents. Like Q Casino and Hotel, Dubuque Racing Association, Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, and others who helped put together about 1,000 free meals for delivery and carryout on Thursday. Like the Dubuque chapter of the NAACP, which provided turkeys to more than 200 households ahead of the holiday. "As needs increase, we must continue to step up and help. Thanksgiving blessings on all those who reached out to those in need. May the bounty of giving continue." Next one is a smiley face. "Major League Baseball's announcement this week that the highly anticipated matchup between the Chicago White Sox and the New York Yankees at the Field of Dreams movie site is back on the calendar landed like an early Christmas present. These days, there's almost nothing better than thinking ahead to days when, let's hope, people can gather for events, go to ball games, and plan community celebrations. Here's hoping Dyersville will be doing just that next summer. MLB announced tentative plans to hold the game on Thursday, August 12th, as long as the national public health crisis has abated. That's exciting news for Dyersville, Dubuque County, and the whole region. Plans were in the works this year to create several days of activities to capitalize on the tourism generated by the Major League matchup. All that will be back on the docket if we get the all clear together. It's heartening to plan for better days ahead in 2021. Just don't hold your breath on getting tickets. And our third piece, also a smiley face. In a year when local residents are spending more time exploring the great outdoors, it's welcome news that a local preserve will get a little bit greater. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources soon will acquire an 80-acre parcel as part of a continued effort to preserve the forest and wildlife at White Pine Hollow State Forest, west of Luxembourg. Hunters and birders are probably most familiar with Landmark Forest, which consists of a 712-acre state preserve dedicated in 1968 and 232 acres of state forest. The area was given preserve status to protect one of Iowa's oldest and largest natural stands of white pine. In 1972, the National Park Service designated the area a national natural landmark. In White Pine Hollow, or if White Pine Hollow hasn't been on your go-to list of area hiking locales, add it. Conservation officials say the unique area has a vast array of plants and animal species. Adding more land to the preserve will help support efforts to protect the many native and endangered species that inhabit White Pine Hollow State Forest. It's exciting to see this kind of investment in Iowa natural habitats, especially at a time when citizens have discovered a new appreciation for these landmark locations. Now we have two letters to the editor. Our first one. Police, like all of us, must be aware of biases. From Frank Potter, St. Anne Drive, Dubuque. Last evening, I watched a documentary on PBS, Hacking Your Mind, Living on Autopilot. It related to Mr. Giese's column in the November 16th TH, where he argues we need to support the police. It showed that most of our decisions are based on automatic or knee-jerk thinking. It is neither bad nor good, but just the way our brain has to work so we can process the continuous decisions that we are required to make. At Stanford University, when they viewed the scripts of 1,000 police body camera recordings of officers stopping motorists, they could tell 2/3 of the time whether the person was white or black. Reviewing the words and the line of questioning, greeting, reason stopped, concern for safety, etc., basically the respect shown toward the driver. For blacks, the officers skipped many of these steps and frequently added, "Put your hands on the wheel," which was seldom seen for whites. The scientists pointed out the officers were not doing this intentionally. It is the biases we use to make quick decisions. The remedy is to be aware of our biases and then slow down our thinking. Mr. Giese focuses on the few who say we should defund the police and not the many who say we need to continue to educate the police as well as ourselves. The chief of Dubuque Police stated at our Unitarian Universalist Fellowship public panel 2 years ago that they work hard to provide awareness and operative training to our local officers. Our second letter. For a real broadcast message, listen to Paul Harvey. From Mike Schroeder, Field of Dreams Way, Dyersville. Hello, Americans! After 4 years of some in the media saying this and claiming that, it's all getting old. I have listened to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity talk about how unfairly President Trump has been treated. I don't know why I listen. Maybe because I'm in disbelief of realizing people believe what they're hearing. I realize Rush and Hannity have to fill their time slot with continuously repeating comments and trying to rile up their listeners with blather. People, it's the same show every day. I know that some of the people reading this letter will reply and claim that everything those two people say is the gospel truth. But that's the great thing about this country. I have the right to express my own opinion. I suggest that Rush and Hannity spend a little time listening to Paul Harvey's A Letter from God. It might improve their style of broadcasting. President Trump might as well listen in, too. It could change his style of thinking. While I'm in the suggestion mood, I would ask everyone to listen to Paul Harvey's From Freedom to Chains. I think we'd sit back and say, wow, now this man was not only good, but great at his job. Although I've heard most of Mr. Harvey's segments in the past, I stumbled upon him while on YouTube last night. I guarantee that once you start listening to Mr. Harvey, you'll be glued to your computer and in awe of how broadcasting is supposed to be done, not talking for 15 hours a week and saying nothing. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I'm Ken, reading from the Friday, November 27th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, reminding you that we are sponsored in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. We now turn to today's obituaries. David L. Simon, days shy of his 84th birthday, David Dave Leroy Simon died from the COVID-19 virus Monday, November 23rd at Bethany Home in Dubuque. Born November 27th, 1936, to Anthony, Tony, and Mary Bernice Kelly Simon, Dave lived a life of service to country, community, and family. Joining the Navy at 20, Dave served on the USS Lake Champlain aircraft carrier as an air controlman. Returning to Dubuque after service, he worked nights at John Deere plant and continued pursuing a degree. Luck would find him taking a class on the Clark campus, where he spotted a young Susan and immediately offered to buy her a drink at the water fountain. While some may say that his line was far from original, no one can argue its success as Dave and Susan Frick celebrated their 54th wedding anniversary this past August. Regretting that he had not actively participated in the civil rights movement while a younger man, Dave joined and ultimately led the Dubuque Human Rights Commission from 1983 to 85 in its mission to end discriminatory practices, including employment and housing in his hometown. He continued his service to Dubuque, serving on the city council from 1985 to 89. In his retirement, Dave mentioned teens at Dubuque Central Alternative High School and volunteered with Hospice, an organization that ultimately helped him during his final days. Having begun his 31-year career at John Deere Dubuque Works, working nights in the factory, Dave eventually moved into the drafting and engineering side of manufacturing, where he worked on numerous projects. After pausing his education during the early years of marriage and child-rearing, he graduated from Loras College in 1977. Among those in attendance were Dave's children, miserably hot but proud, standing at the Loras Rock Bowl for the ceremony. An early feminist, Dave was an active parent and encouraged and supported his wife as she pursued career, graduate school, and entrepreneurship. With a passion for travel, history, music, and exploring, Dave combined those loves whenever he could. Dave's children can attest to long driving vacations spent visiting major battle sites instead of amusement parks. His lifelong pursuit of opera began as a young man living in New York, sparked by a buddy who was able to sneak him in to the Metropolitan Opera House and later to scheduling trips to visit his adult children around performances by the Three Tenors and Wagner's Ring Cycle. As Dave's Parkinson's disease progressed, he lived vicariously through the travels of Sue and their children. A life enriched by amazing friendships, Dave relished the adventures shared throughout his life, whether it was recounting basic training and traveling through the Deep South, his walk in the woods, or James Joyce book club. Dave was gifted by his network of friends. Dave was fortunate to be under the compassionate care of the team at Bethany Home and Hospice. Plans to donate his body to further scientific research were thwarted because of University of Iowa policies surrounding the COVID-19 infection. A celebration of life service for Dave will be held at a later date. Friends may share condolences to the family and memorials can be sent to Bethany Home or Hospice of Dubuque, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home, and cremation service is in care of the arrangements. And we continue with a couple of pieces from the Tri-State News. At the top of the fold, attorney calls former Bears alibi into question. The attorney for Marnie Yang, the woman convicted 9 years ago of murdering the pregnant girlfriend of former Chicago Bear Sean Gale, has asked a judge to reopen the investigation, saying Gale's alibi on the morning of the murder doesn't hold up. Jed Stone recently filed a motion in Lake County Circuit Court pointing to the grand jury testimony of a detective who said Gale had been at a North Chicago barbershop between 8:30 and 9 a.m. October 4, 2007, the day that Potosi, Wisconsin native Rondi Reuter, 42, was shot to death just before 8 a.m. in her Deerfield condominium. In fact, Stone said, surveillance video of the parking lot shows Gale entering at 10:32 a.m. The alibi prosecutors created for Sean Gale has fallen apart, Stone said at a recent news conference. That and other evidence belies the alibi of Sean Gale. We believe due process requires that the state look again at who the murderer was in this case. Authorities viewed Gale, who played safety for the Bears during their 1985 Super Bowl season, as a suspect early in the investigation, but ruled him out within days. Yang, who also was romantically involved with Gale, was convicted of Reuter's murder after making a covertly recorded admission of guilt to a friend, an admission she now says was false, intended to draw police attention away from her son. At the news conference, private investigator Steve Lapino said Gale told police he had been sleeping the morning of Reuter's murder until 9 or 9:15 a.m., but that his first documented activity was a text message he sent to Reuters at 8:50. After that, he made various phone calls until he showed up at the barbershop where he was informed that Reuter had been killed, Lapino said. Stone said the inconsistencies in Gale's accounts draws his credibility into question. Gale, who now provides NFL commentary for Sky Sports in England, could not be reached for comment. A spokesman for Lake County State's Attorney Michael Neuheim says, whose office has sought to dismiss Yang's petition for a new trial, declined to comment, but in an earlier filing, Neuheim discounted the attack on Gale's alibi, saying it was old news the court had examined and rejected. It is clear the defendant continues to rehash these salacious claims regarding Sean Gale for their sensationalistic value in an effort to deflect from her own clear guilt, he wrote. In another recently filed motion, Stone asked the judge to order prosecutors to hand over various evidence, including information that would allow Yang's defense team to play wiretapped conversations they say would prove her innocence. Yang says she told her father in a recorded phone call that she planned to lie about her involvement in Reuter's murder to get the heat off her son. We need to find that conversation, Stone said. We've obtained the wiretap tapes, but because of the complexity of the equipment used by the state in this wiretap, our experts cannot play those tapes. Disclosing a tape to the defense without the ability to play it is like not disclosing it at all. Yang's next court date is set for January 12th. And next we have a large center picture with water and some kind of a floating thing in the water and a young person masked doing some kind of computing perhaps and a couple of lights shining on it. And it looks like something I've never seen because I probably haven't. And the caption confirms that. Abby Urban, curator of living collection at Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium, works in the holding area of the main channel exhibit. Visitors can see this area of the museum as part of the new behind-the-scenes aquarium tours. So there you have it. Go behind the scenes. Aquarium offers unique tours. For those who have wondered what goes into caring for a catfish or tending to a turtle, National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium staff will show how it's done. The Dubuque Museum recently started offering paid behind-the-scenes tours for small groups, giving a glimpse into the rooms used to care for the museum's living collections. According to Wendy Scardino, the museum's director of marketing and community communications, the tours are a reincarnation of a service that the facility had previously offered in a more limited format. We have done behind-the-scenes tours on a case-by-case basis for a number of years, and when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, we wanted to find a way to allow families or small groups to still have unique activities, she said. This did kind of arise in its new form during COVID as a response to an opportunity to families who were perhaps more comfortable in a very small group setting. Curator of Living Collections, Abby Urban, said tour participants can see the museum's food preparation rooms, veterinary room, water quality monitoring room, and even a room that houses the live insects used to feed reptiles and amphibians. They also will visit the area behind the main channel aquarium and help a staff member feed animals within the main channel or backwater marsh aquarium. The general feedback of people who see this space for the first time is just surprise, Urban said. There really is more that goes into caring for a large captive collection like the one we have that people think about. It's just almost mind-blowing. Urban is taking a primary role in leading the tours, although all living collectors' staff are qualified tour guides. So far, the team has led a few mock tours for other River Museum staff, many of whom have also never seen the area before. Even our employees don't see this space. It's that unique, she said. The 45 to 60-minute tours are available every Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday at 1 p.m. and can be bought online or at the box office. All tours are offered at a flat rate of $120 for a group of up to 4 guests. Urban said the tours are ideal for families who choose not to travel during the holidays due to COVID-19, but still want to explore somewhere new. This is something you can do close to home in a small group, but it's unique, it's surprising, and it kind of feels like a trip away from home, she said. This really kind of checked all the boxes of what we wanted for our guests, and the feedback we're getting to this is something people have been wanting to see for quite some time. Scardino said that once the pandemic passes, the museum hopes to maintain the tours and eventually expand both the number of them and the amount of people per hour, or per tour, rather. This is something that the people have never seen, Urban said. Even if you've been a member of our family and facility for years, this would be a totally different side to experiencing the museum and aquarium in a way that you haven't seen before. My dear listeners, I forgot at the bottom of the page one other obituary and the births. So let me put those in now, please. We have Harlan Benteen from Monona, Iowa. Harlan Benteen, 93, of Monona, died Tuesday, November 24th. A private family funeral will be held Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Monona is assisting the family. My apologies for having forgotten that. And beneath that, we have our births. Not many this time, but they're there. We welcome our new ones flying on into this world. We have one on Tuesday, November 24th, Froling. Reese and Molly Froling, Bellevue, Iowa, a boy at Unity Point Health, Findlay Hospital, Dubuque. And Wednesday, November 25th, Miller. Trina Miller of Dubuque, a boy at Mercy One Medical Center of Dubuque. And we welcome them both to the family. And now we have our news in brief. Platteville Library altering services due to climbing number of COVID cases. Platteville Public Library announced it is altering the services due to the climbing number of COVID cases in Grant County. The library will switch to curbside pickup and public computer access only starting on Saturday, November 28th. Curbside pickup and computer access will be available from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and from 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday. The announcement states that the library's board will discuss the temporary service level in its December 2nd meeting. Dubuque Symphony announces plans for online holiday concerts. Due to a rise in cases of COVID-19 and increased restrictions on public gatherings, Dubuque Symphony Orchestra will present its holiday brass events as an online-only concert. The concerts, originally scheduled for Saturday and Sunday, December 5th and 6th at Five Flags Theater, will be available for viewing for free from December 15th to 31st at DubukeSymphony.org. Season subscribers have been issued refunds. Single ticket holders who purchase tickets through Ticketmaster will be refunded via the payment option used for purchase. Refunds could take up to 30 days for processing. Those who purchase tickets at the Five Flags Center box office also will have tickets automatically refunded back to the payment option used for purchase. For questions, leave a message at the box office 563-589-4258. For more information, call the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra office 563-557-1677. Proposals sought for Maquoketa Hospital site. Proposals now are being solicited for the Maquoketa Hospital campus that will be vacated after the construction of the new facility is completed. Jackson County Regional Health Center officials, in partnership with the city and Jackson County Economic Alliance, have put out a request for qualified developers who possess the ability, desire, and financial resources to develop an approximately 12-acre site at 700 West Grove Street that includes the current hospital. Officials recently predicted that the construction of the new $37 million hospital should be completed by late December and that it would open on February 11th. The facility sits on a 25-acre parcel along 17th Street on the south side of Maquoketa. That means the current hospital and site will no longer be used for that purpose in the not-too-distant future, prompting local officials to solicit pitches on the future of the property. To the maximum extent possible, responses to the request for proposals should mix market reality, community desires, and economic feasibility, states an announcement posted online by Jackson County Economic Alliance. Proposals must be submitted by February 11th. And now we end with our news of the weekend, our weekend buzz, the noteworthy things to do this weekend. Reflections in the Park, now through January 3rd from 5 to 10 p.m. Admissions $10 per vehicle. Turkey Trail and Gnome Hunt today, Swiss Valley Nature Preserve, 10 to 2. The Duke County Conservation Board will host a free turkey trail and gnome hunt, both self-led opportunities for families to enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday by exploring the outdoors. Stockton Christmas Walk, today and Saturday in Stockton, The holiday tradition begins with a tree lighting at 5:30 today and the crowning of Little Jack Frost and Miss Merry Christmas. Caroling, cookies, and cocoa will be provided. A story hour with Santa will take place from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at Stockton Township Library. From 11 until 1, children can visit Santa at Main Street parties and events. From 11 until 2, there will be horse-drawn carriage rides. Other events will include a Festival of Trees viewing at Stockton Heritage Museum and bowling at Stockton Bowling Lanes. Santa at Dickeyville Community Park, Saturday from 10 to 11:30. Bricky Memorial Library will host an opportunity for children to mail letters to Santa, greet Santa from the car, and receive a treat from Santa's elf. Vehicles must enter the park on North Church Street and exit on North Center Street. Shellsburg Lighted Christmas Parade, Saturday, 6 p.m. Parade route has been extended this year to allow spectators to socially distance or sit in their cars. The parade starts at the Shellsburg Fire Station. It will continue up Water Street to the Shellsburg home, 204 East Water Street, before turning right on Church Street, left on Judgment Street, right on Estee Street, right on Galena Street, and at Fred Blackburn and Sons, Inc., 240 West Church Street is where it will end. Well, my dear listeners, that brings us to the end of the Friday, November 27th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, spoken by Ken and brought to you by IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. We hope you have had a festive and careful Thanksgiving, and the holiday festivities now open up for sure. Have yourselves a safe weekend and week ahead. Until you hear from me again, take care.